You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network. We're one of your weekly, bi-weekly Star Trek podcasts. We talk all things Trek, whether it's movies, TV shows, comics, games. For the past couple months, we've been kind of doing a refresh as we get ready for the Picard show. It's been called Prepping for Picard. We're going to wrap that up today and talk Picard Episode 1. And as always, I am one of your hosts, Greg Bosco, and with me, of course, is Mr. Derek. Say hello, buddy.
Hello, hello, Greg. Welcome to a new series of Star Trek.
Another new series, and apparently we're going to be getting many more series based on all the little news that we've been seeing lately.
Yeah, there's a lot that's in the works, you know, and Discovery will be back for season 3 this year, and Lower Decks will kick off at some point in 2020 as well. So even just this year alone, we'll see 3 different Star Trek TV series.
And I'm actually calling it that I think season 3 is the end of Discovery.
Really?
Not because of, you know, quality or anything, but I think, look at how much content there is out there, and it's starting to hit almost that Star Wars level, where even Disney has said, all right, we're going to take a break from the Star Wars movies for a bit. Because if you oversaturate, then it kind of divides the audiences a lot.
Well, you're certainly right about that. The studio, though, has been kind of open, saying that they want to have a different show of Star Trek going year-round, that never really overlapping, but just from one to another. So I don't know, man. I think they might keep Discovery around until they have enough to fill the slate.
Well, I'm still hopeful for the you know, Captain Pike show. So we'll see.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I don't think there's too many people who would be unhappy with that decision.
I think I actually want to say that the studio is probably surprised so many people liked Anson Mount, number one, and just wanted a Captain Pike show. I don't think anybody anticipated how good they were going to be on screen.
Well, they were all great. I mean, Anson Mount, of course, was wonderful. Rebecca Romijn was wonderful. And Ethan Peck was really great as Spock, you know, just from casting decisions alone. And that Enterprise bridge set that we got to see was just gorgeous. It would be a shame if we never got to see it again.
Yeah, if they build it and immediately put it into storage, I will have many questions. But that's not what we're here for. We're not here to just talk Discovery. We're going to wrap up prepping for Picard and then talk Picard Episode 1. This is probably going to be the last time we do a prepping for Picard episode, so I would like to kick it over to you. This was your baby. You created this. You had this concept, which, by the way, I am seeing other creators use the same concept, so I like it. I like that. So many Star Trek fans had the same idea to come up with their favorite Picard episodes.
Well, yeah. So back in June, I put out a list on heroespodcast.com where I put together my top 20 quintessential Picard episodes. And these were about the character Picard, not necessarily the show Picard, because we knew very little about it at the time. We had no teasers or trailers. We didn't really know anything other than Picard. And so I put together these 20 episodes, some of which are two-parters, to be fair, and then we talked about them on the show, starting with episode 73, and we jumped around a little bit with the most recent and final one being episode 85, where Ray, who's been a recurring guest on the show, and I talked about the finale to TNG, All Good Things. But now that the Picard show is happening and we know so much more about it, I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to talk about some TNG episodes or films that didn't make the list, but are important to the show. And, you know, like there's an easy one, of course, which is I, Borg, because we know that Hugh, the Borg character Hugh, is going to be in Picard season 1. And if you don't know I, Borg or Descent, you don't know who he is. So, Greg, since I made the original list, I'm curious, is there anything that didn't make the list that you now think maybe people should cover?
Well, and that's, you know, I've been thinking about that because there is so much Star Trek content. There's so much just quality episodes out there. And it's always easy to armchair quarterback, right? After you do a big project and you go back and look and say, I could have done this or I should have done this. But it's really hard for me to do that because, for example, there's that like 5, 6, or 7 episode stretch in season 3 that culminates with Yesterday's Enterprise and Best of Both Worlds, where there's like 7, I think it's like 5, it's like 6 or 7 amazing episodes back to back to back that we could have named for Picard. You know, whether it's they're dealing with the one episode with the girl that, you know, she had the clan vengeance episode where she wanted to get revenge on the people that murdered her family like 100 years in the past. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it shows that even though Picard has a greater mission for Starfleet, he's also not going to let, you know, petty revenge get in the way of that. And again, it's just the really what revisiting all these Picard episodes taught me was whether they intended it or not, Patrick Stewart and Captain Picard was so integral to Next Generation that I legitimately think without him, you have a hugely different show.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, I don't know, I like kind of doing, you know, in the corporate world, the private sector world, which I've worked in for the last decade of my life, you know, they use a term called, you know, doing a post-mortem after a project, which I never liked that term because we're not talking about anybody who's actually died. But it's looking back on a project and say, well, what could we have done differently or better given, you know, our hindsight, right? And I think knowing now what the Picard show at least appears to be, what we're being told that it is, there are several other episodes I think that would have been helpful. Data being such a large influence on the Picard character as well as the Picard show certainly makes me feel like I should have included some Data arcs a little more intently. And so that would include what basically the lore trilogy, which is Data Lore, Brothers, and the two-part Descent. I think those three are really important because you learn about where Data came from. You learn that he has a brother. You get to meet Soong and find out why Data was created in the first place. And if you tie I-Borg into this as well, Descent is a finale not just for Lore, but also for I-Borg and for Hugh as far as we knew at the time. So I would definitely include those four episodes in my list. And the only other one I would include, and this encroaches on spoiler territory for Star Trek Picard Episode 1 Remembrance, but pretty high level, is the episode The Offspring, where Data creates a daughter, Lol. I think that episode also would have been very important to people. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Greg?
I mean, I agree with you because I love that episode, but as when we start talking about Picard, I'll admit I was a little less happy with the premiere, and The Offspring is a great episode, but unfortunately they don't even reference Lol at all one time in the episode Remembrance, and we're going to talk about that. But it's funny that we talk about that little post-mortem idea of what would we have done. I actually would have added an episode from season 4, and it's a goofy episode. Remember Cupid?
Oh, I love that episode.
And the only reason I started thinking about that lately is the Picard we get in the current show is, I hate to use the term beaten down, but maybe he's a little bit defeated because he's had a rough couple years towards his end of his career. Things haven't gone the way he wanted. And Cupid was a good reminder of, even though it was a holodeck simulation and Q was involved in all this stuff, he still gave it his all. Just like Patrick Stewart, or excuse me, just like Captain Picard always did. He doesn't do things half-assed, even on a holodeck.
No, I think you're right. I think there are a few episodes, and Cupid's one of my favorites. I absolutely love it. Where you could really show the lighter side of Picard. The Big Goodbye, for example. Which is really early in season 1, where you get introduced to his kind of holodeck fantasies. You know, and he plays the private eye and everything. I think that also shows a side of Picard that a lot of people forget, you know, because he's such the diplomat. that people don't think about what does he do for fun.
That's a good point, and nobody really talks about that, even to the point when he joins them at the end of All Good Things, when he joins for the card game, and he's like, I should have done this a long time ago. And they're like, oh yeah, you were always welcome, but I get it, because you mentioned the private sector world and the public sector world. I've worked in some leadership roles where you kind of have to be distant from the people below you. Not just because of morals and ethics, but it kind of helps to separate the leadership versus the workers. And I hate to say it like that, but Picard always kind of gave off that suggestion that he loved his crew and he loved his people, and he was willing to do whatever he could for them. And there's so many episodes out there that we could name. We could spend the next 10 episodes of Red Shirts and Runabouts talking about episodes we missed.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. And I think, you know, of course, we only have one episode to go off of right now. So this is something maybe you could go back to when the season's over and see even more. But it really just comes down to knowing what's the background information that you need. And I think the list was pretty solid. I think Iborg is really the major one that would have been helpful. And then, of course, I didn't do this yet, but maybe a best of 7 of 9 from Voyager, because, you know, she's looking to play a decent role here this season. And I don't have anything outside of TNG. I don't even have the movies. I mean, a huge argument could be made for Star Trek Nemesis needing to be on this list, because of, it's the way Data dies. It's the way Data's story ends. And it's the last time Picard sees him. And it's the last time we saw all of these characters. So, you know, adding Nemesis and Iborg to the list would have been huge. Adding something from 7 of 9, I think, would have been great as well. Just so people know, who is this person? You know, because just because you watched The Next Generation doesn't mean you watched Voyager. You know, there are some diehard TNG fans out there who just never watched Voyager for whatever reason. And 7 of 9 doesn't mean anything to you other than you're probably like, oh, right, she's the Borg from Voyager. Maybe that's all you know. But she's so much more than that from a character perspective. So I don't know. I'm thinking about putting together a 7 of 9 list. And depending on these other characters, you know, how big of a role do Troy and Riker have, for example, you know, maybe creating a small list for them.
But yeah, because you're right. We so early into the Picard show, we don't know if they're going to be, you know, 5 minutes of an episode, or if they're going to be recurring themes. Like, we don't know if we'll ever see Data again. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen glimpses of him. We've seen some dreams, but will Brent Spiner be back? It's hard to tell. I'm Absolutely. Assuming yes, but.
So we did have one big piece of actual Star Trek news that relates to Picard before we jump into the episode that I just wanted to bring up, because personally, it's incredibly exciting. And that is, Patrick Stewart has officially and formally invited Whoopi Goldberg to join the show in season 2.
And not only that, but season 2 has already been, like, approved. So right. His invitation to her isn't just a little fun thing between friends. It's a legitimate offer at this point.
It is. It's absolutely legitimate. It's been greenlit. And he did this on The View, the TV show The View that Whoopi Goldberg hosts. And it's a wonderful segment. You should go out. You should find it. You can go to @RedShirtsPod on Twitter. It's in our feed. If you don't know where else to get it, but it's a wonderful clip. And Guinan has always been one of my favorite characters in Star Trek. And I never felt like we got enough of her. Her character was never really given the justice it deserved. You know, she's in Generations for a little bit. She's in the background in Nemesis, but she doesn't even have any lines, and she's not in First Contact or Insurrection at all. So the last we really see her that has any real character development is primarily the show. And I always wanted more from her, more of her relationship with Picard. Why does he trust her so implicitly in things like Yesterday's Enterprise or Time's Arrow even? You know, why? I want to know more about that. So knowing that she has an opportunity now to come back in a show that is much more character focused, I'm very excited. What do you think?
No, I'm with you on that, because she always played an integral role in Next Generation, and that relationship has always been there, whether it's a relationship, it's not a romance, it's it's a trusting, reliable friendship, which is almost more important to a lot of people. So if Whoopi Goldberg is interested, I'm sure they got her hats somewhere for Guinan. Just break her out and have her show up and make it happen in a way that's meaningful, not just he calls her and there she is. Have something terrible going on. And she hears about it on the sidelines, and she decides to intervene to help out her old friend, Jean-Luc.
Well, because her species lives significantly longer than ours. So Picard is old, but she's not. You know, I mean, she's, I guess by this point, you know, she's like 650 years old or something like that, I think. I'd have to double check on that. But, you know, these 20 years that have passed are not as much to her. You know, and so I'd be curious to see. How much has her character changed in that time? If you live 800 years, you know, like a Wookiee or something like that, what is 20 years to you versus 20 years to us?
And the last time we really engaged with her since then and now, not only have the Borg attacked again, but the Federation's been involved with a catastrophic war with the Dominion. Mm-hmm. So I know she's going to have a lot of feedback for people on what that means to the people of the Federation and Picard himself.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we dive into spoilers for Star Trek Picard Episode 1, Remembrance, just a few small notes for people who may have questions about it. So it's basically being released, if you're in the United States and have access to CBS All Access, the streaming service, it's being released at midnight on Thursdays Pacific time. So Greg and I are in Kansas City, so that's 2 a.m. for us, for example. You know, it'd be 3 a.m. For people in New York or Philadelphia. And that can get a little complicated for people. So I'm just, you know, spoiler warnings for Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. You know, if you get to see it early, try using the hashtag Star Trek Picard so people can filter that out on Twitter. And there's also a after show, The Ready Room. Which is now being hosted by Will Wheaton, which, Greg, did you watch that at all?
I watched a couple clips, you know, and that's something you and I talked about with Discovery. I have a hard time getting into the after show stuff. Like, even with Game of Thrones, I just couldn't, you know, the first 5 or 10 minutes, I'm like, meh, and then I just lose interest.
Well, fair enough. Well, so I did watch it. If we have time, we can talk about it at the end. But I just want to do a shout out to Will Wheaton that he's hosting this, and I thought he was wonderful. And so just props to him for doing that. But
well, he's a natural when it comes to interacting with people and even fans in general. And obviously, he knows Trek, and that's something you and I talked about with Discovery Season 1. Is the after show, the after Treks? It almost seemed too fake to be real, and it was. I mean, they were passionate, but I don't think they were passionate for the right reasons, whereas Will Wheaton, he knows what to emphasize, what not to emphasize, what to talk about, what not to talk about. It's because he's Star Trek royalty at this point.
Well, and what's great about this, without giving anything away, is that it's straight up an interview format. He brings on guests that have to do with the show, and he interviews them about the show. And so, yeah, it's polished, right? And I'm sure the questions are agreed upon ahead of time, but it's not overly fan servicey. It's straight up just like production questions, story questions, you know, things like that, which is really cool. So it doesn't come off as cheesy or you know, BS-y or anything like that. It really comes across as genuine because these are cool questions for behind the scenes stuff that at least someone like me, I'm really interested in. So, but all right, so let's do our spoiler warning right now. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do our deep dive discussion into Star Trek Picard Episode 1, Remembrance. Recently on the Heroes Podcast Network, Echo Station.
Well, what's the main planet that Endor, the forest moon of Endor? It's a moon. So there's a major planet, obviously, that it
is the forest moon of Endor. Is Endor the actual planet then?
See, isn't that confusing? Yes. Is it the forest moon of the planet Endor, or is it the forest moon called Endor?
Kaiju Curry House.
It got to the point where he started climbing the Empire State Building, and my mom is like, he's not gonna die, is he?
Oh no.
My mom doesn't know shit about these films, but anyways, it was just like, Mom, this doesn't end well for Kong. And she's just like, I can't watch the rest of this. Turn it off. I'm like, you can't get to this point in Peter Jackson's King Kong 2 hours and like whatever many minutes later and not watch the end.
Screen heroes.
The nipples just were confusing to me because they just make no sense.
That is our clip, by the way.
But I mean, male nipples are kind of confusing anyway. So.
Right? Like, well, they serve zero purpose.
Do you think that was the point he was trying to make?
It's a much deeper message, yes.
Is Batman and Robin a heavily an allegory? Social allegory?
Yeah.
Subscribe today at heroespodcast.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more.
All right, welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. Derek and I were just finishing up our wrap-up of our prepping for Picard discussion for the new Picard TV show. And now, spoiler warning, we're going to start talking about the Picard show. And like we always do before we get into the episode, we kind of give our little, you know, 3-5 second overview. Derek, why don't you go first?
Sure. So, I've watched it twice now, just for perspective for anybody listening and who cares about such things. But overall, I found it to be very strong. I thought the production value was really quite good in general. I like the cast a lot, but I do think it really would have benefited from a double length premiere like all of the other Star Trek shows. This is the first Star Trek, live action Star Trek, to not get a double length premiere since the original series. And so I think it really would have benefited from that to kind of get the story rolling. What about you, Greg?
No, I understand what you mean about the longer premiere length would have definitely benefited. I'm probably in the minority where I say the show I've kind of found disappointing. I agree. The production quality was amazing. The visuals, the scenes, the imagery, the music. This is a show where they obviously are putting hearts and souls into making. My disappointment came with the story, and I know we're going to talk about that moving forward. But I'll also admit, seeing Patrick Stewart on screen again is always a joy for me. So that kind of pushes me into interested enough to continue watching. I'm not going to say it's like, I mean, I've been reading some reviews online where people are like, oh, it's a complete betrayal of Star Trek, just stop watching now. I'm like, all right, well, don't go that far. You know, you and I talked about that. You can love something and still criticize it.
Yeah.
And that's what I am. I'm a Star Trek fan. I don't mind criticizing it. But, you know, I am happy to see it back at least.
Well, I always think, like, if you've watched one episode of a show and want to condemn it to the depths of hell or something like that, especially in a franchise like this, like, it just seems kind of disingenuous. Because there's lots of bad episodes in Star Trek, you know? And they don't necessarily, those episodes don't reflect the entire series. I mean, TNG's got some bad episodes. Code of Honor, for example, is a bad episode for very specific reasons. And Voyager, you've got Threshold, which is terrible for a whole nother group of reasons. If you were to say that those two episodes completely represent their series, I mean, come on, that's just not realistic.
No, and it's why I understand criticism of Enterprise when the first people complained that the first season and a half was slow. Well, it was, and people admitted that. The creators admitted that. But the last 2.5 seasons of Enterprise were pretty amazing. Mm. And it's a shame that they just couldn't get past that hump of lost viewers after a season and a half. But I'm with you. We could do it. Look, maybe that's one of the specials we'll do, is we'll take the 10 worst rated episodes on IMDb of Star Trek and watch them and talk about them.
Oh, I'm for that. That's a great idea. So we did a poll on our Twitter. So at RedShirtsPod on Twitter, we did a poll. And we did these a while back when Short Treks was coming on and things like that. But I decided to start it back up with Picard, especially for the premiere. And that was just a letter grading on how you would rate the show. And I will say this does paint you, Greg, as kind of in the minority, because 85% gave it an A, with 13% giving it a B and 2% giving it a C. Nobody went lower than that at all. So, Greg, if you were to kind of summarize your feelings in a letter grade, where would that sit?
I would give it a solid C. I'm not going to give it an F or a D. That's, you know, an F or a D is Code of Honor. I mean, that's an F. And even there are certain episodes out there that are, you know, bad. This gets me because of the story and the overall plot, and that's what brings it down. It's the production quality, the acting talent, and the dedication that gives it a boost to me.
Well, that's fair. All right, so then let's dig into it. Let's dig into things here. So you mentioned Patrick Stewart and his performance. I thought that the strongest thing in this episode is the acting talent. I think that this whole cast, I mean, Patrick Stewart's an incredibly phenomenal actor, and I love him. But I thought everybody else did a really good job in this. Because a lot of these actors, I mean, I don't know these people. These people are new to me. And I just thought they were really solid. Did you have a standout or anybody you thought, you know, really did a good job?
Well, this is going to make me sound like a jerk because I didn't write her name down in my notes. But the female scientist that I was starting to call Discount Kristen Bell. Because
so, Allison Pill is her real name.
Yeah, and I really liked it. I liked her dedication. I liked how she was talking. I liked how she was interacting. I thought she looked good on screen. And I'm not saying just physically. I mean, her presence. You can find any good-looking actor or actress to do anything, right? Mm-hmm. But it takes a certain skill to have that presence on screen. I like that the whole time she's interacting with Picard, you can tell that she's bitter about everything that's happened to her and happened to her career. And that's, to me, and Derek, you've known me for a long time, especially with our podcast. I like it when characters act real, and acting bitter about how your career has gone is very real to a lot of people. I've been that way many times.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. I thought she was great. I really like the two Romulans who are on Chateau Picard, who are kind of, you know, helping Picard in his later life. And so those are Laris and Zaban, and they're played by Orla Brady and Jamie McShane. I thought they were really good. We don't get a lot, like Romulans are in Star Trek a lot, but they're like such one note characters so often. You know, they're these closed off, guarded, sneaky, but highly intelligent people, right? And they all wear the exact same thing with the same haircut. And this isn't like that. These two are just completely like fleshed out organic characters that have their own looks. They look different. They don't look exactly the same. And I like that the Romulans are finally getting that type of treatment after the Klingons and Vulcans have had their shot. But I thought both actors just brought a really strong presence to balance Patrick Stewart, because it's really kind of the three of them early on. And it is no easy task to play opposite an actor like Patrick Stewart when he's taking back a character that's so iconic.
No, I'm with you on that. And that's one of the criticisms online that I will poke at, is people talking about how the Romulans were our enemies for a long time, blah, 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 like all this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, okay, there's that. They helped us with the war against the Dominion. They lost millions. Granted, it was kind of through a bit of subterfuge. They lost Romulus. So Romulus was destroyed. And we know at least the Federation was willing to try to help them. Now, everything we've known about Romulans and even and Klingons, of course, you know, yesterday's Enterprise, it's not always if you're successful at helping them, it's you putting through the effort to help them that they remember. And even you, with what we saw through this episode, you know, building a flotilla and trying to get it to them and something happening to the Romulan people, that's still going to be a huge sign of, well, the Federation made an effort. They sure as hell didn't go to the Klingons probably and go, hey, are you going to help us? The Klingons were probably watching from the border going, eh, sucks to be you.
Well, let's not forget that in Nemesis, Picard and therefore Starfleet and the Federation are responsible for taking down Shinzon, who the Romulan government considered to be a traitor.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they helped the Romulans multiple times at this point.
You know, I mean, Shinzon was responsible for murdering basically the entire Romulan government, you know, and all the government heads. And Picard was responsible for taking him down and helping restore Romulus to its original state. That wasn't forgotten either. So, yeah, I mean, 20 years ago, the Romulans were our enemies, but it's been 20 years. Things do change. The Klingons are no longer our enemies. Everyone's okay with that. Things change. So, You know, and that's the point, I think, that's really being made in the interview scene when Picard's being interviewed and, you know, she goes, you know, Romulan lives. And he goes, no, lives, because it shouldn't matter. Right. It's lives. That's the phrase. It doesn't matter what kind they are. We're supposed to try and save people. That's the mission of Starfleet, is a positive one.
I mean, hell, let's go all the way back to Best of Both Worlds, where, you know, the Klingons are sending ships, and the one admiral says, hell, we've even tried to open up communications with the Romulans. So they're not so anti this, anti that, that they refuse to help one another. That happened 30 years ago when it was a topic.
Well, because they respected each other. They might not ever say it, right? But there was a lot of mutual respect there, which is why they weren't constantly at war with each other. You know, and your point about the Dominion War, I think, is significant. That all three major powers came together to fight the Dominion is no small feat. And that was only a few years prior to Nemesis. So that's all very important. And I think the tone of the show here is what really drives me into it, is the way it parallels our society today. The idea that there are people who were trying to do good, trying to do the right thing. And in a moment of tragedy, in a moment of panic, people took that opportunity to turn inward and against the ideals that we were supposed to stand for.
Exactly. And it's taking a good thing and turning it around to make it look like a bad thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I think that it's important that it's Picard, of all people, who wants to point this out, because that's who he is. I mean, look at that character throughout Star Trek. Look at even just the movies. In Insurrection, he straight up takes off his badge and his pips and steals the, he's going to steal the captain's yacht to go against and fight against an admiral of the Federation and their allies. He does it multiple times. On the show, he does it. He is always one to go against Starfleet when they are in the wrong. I mean, he does it in The Offspring, which is referenced in this episode very subtly. But, you know, he does it in The Offspring when he refuses to turn over Lol to Starfleet for experimentation. It's not who he is. I mean, it goes all the way back to Measure of a Man. He's given orders, and Picard decides that he's going to fight them as much as he can. You know, he wasn't at the point yet. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, let's just go ahead and throw spoilers out. Spoilers.
Yeah, yeah.
If you haven't watched Picard episode one yet, stop listening and come back in 30 minutes or 60 minutes. So basically what happens is Picard is one of the huge leading factors as an admiral, pushing to help save the Romulans, pushing to build a fleet. Yeah, I'll admit, I think it's a little ridiculous that they're trying to build 10,000 ships, but that's whatever. I'm not talking about the logistics. But so many people are trying to talk about how, well, the synthetics destroyed all those ships and destroyed Mars, blah, blah, blah. But okay, fine. So the synthetics did that. The synthetics were going to do something regardless of trying to help the Romulans or not. And that's what Picard was trying to say during that interview. Is yes, the synthetics rose up, they stopped us from building it. But building the ships to try to help Romulus was important, and we had to try to help them. That's what you do. That's what you do for your neighbors, for your colleagues, for your friends, or your enemies, which, by the way, if you've never seen Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, when Praxis explodes and poisons the Klingon homeworld, there was a faction of Starfleet that wanted to invade, yes. But the bigger faction of Starfleet wanted to do what? Help the Klingons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's an important distinction. You know, like, the Romulans are not the synthetics, and the synthetics are not the Romulans. They weren't even working together as far as we know. But even then, you know, the synthetic storyline is very interesting here, because while, yes, it harkens back to Measure of a Man, and they name drop Maddox, and there's all those possible ramifications of creating a slave race and all of that, which is, I'm sure, going to tie into things here. The Starfleet reaction to the synthetics by banning them completely, outright making their existence illegal, is a reflection of things that our own society has done over the years. Like in World War II, when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, we started putting Japanese Americans in camps. in internment camps and how wrong that is to do to people. And this is the same thing. This is the idea that a group of people did a thing that does not mean that everyone like that is an enemy. Or that we should treat people like they're our enemies, because we had a duty to do good in our own abilities, whatever resources we had. Was it terrible that Mars was attacked and nearly 100,000 people were killed? Of course, it's absolutely horrible. But how many more died because we then refused to continue the mission to help the Romulans?
Exactly. And again, that's when it comes to any TV show, whether it's Star Trek or any of the Star Wars shows that are out there now, or Babylon 5, any of the major sci-fi shows, when you start talking numbers, it gets difficult for the basic fan to understand what's happening. Because 100,000 is horrible to us, you know, the idea of 100,000 casualties. But, you know, and I'm going to reference a recent movie. I don't know if you got a chance to see 1917, the World War I movie that just came out.
Not yet. It is on my list.
So, I mean, they say in the trailers they're trying to stop an attack that might cost 1,500 lives. Well, that's bad until you actually read a book about World War I and you realize on July, like, 1st, 1916, the British had 30,000 casualties in a single, like, hour. And so, like, oh, well, 1,500 isn't that bad. So 100,000 is still terrible to them, but it's still so hard for us, like, fans to understand what's happening. Like, the 900 million Romulans. And I know you and I were talking about that on our Red Shirts Facebook group. We don't exactly know what the impact of the supernova was yet. It destroyed Romulus, but it did destroy any other planets? Kind of? Maybe? We don't know.
There's not a map. Like, you know, we it would be great at this point in the lore to have a map that showed, you know, this is where the star was and this is the blast radius. Right, these are all of the systems that were rendered inhabitable or completely destroyed when the star went supernova. Because a star going supernova, not every star can go supernova. It's a chain of reactions that has to do with the density of the star and the age of the star and different things like that. So, you know, how big was that explosion? Well, I'm not an astrophysicist. I'm not an astronomer or anything like that. So I have no idea. And the show didn't really tell us. So we don't know. But I think it's implied, or at least I inferred, that millions of lives were lost, tens of millions of lives were lost when Starfleet decided to cease its rescue mission.
And yeah, because they completely stop. They don't even make an attempt, basically, at that point.
And even if it's only a million, right? A million people died because we chose to stop after less than 100,000 died from a different group of people. I mean, there's no ethical way to justify that. That's not moral. That's not doing the right. That's not upholding the values of Starfleet or the Federation. And Picard knew it, and Picard retired in protest. And so, Greg, I'm curious, at that point, in that part of the story, did you have any issues with that or where Picard as a person is?
No, I actually completely understand that. And something we've talked about before and other people have, but there's so much of real life history involved with Star Trek, from Gene Roddenberry's days, his time in the military as a bomber crewman, you know, James Doohan serving, all these people and all these real life events that have impacted things. That's very realistic of political and military leaders kind of resigning in protest at a decision they can't control. And I get that. That makes complete sense to me. And because it's so painful to have to do, like, I would hate to do it in my real life, that I can understand why Picard did. You resign in disgust, basically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I think it just fits the tone of the character well at this particular point. So, all right. So let's move on then to the next thing. So, Greg, let's give you an opportunity. What is a story point that you didn't care for?
Well, I was really upset with the concept of, and when I say upset, so I know I'm the guy in red shirts that kind of poo-poos on Star Trek. I'm not going to like not pay my taxes or pay my bills because this episode annoyed me. I'm not one of those. You know, my childhood was not ruined. But subtle context, like when you and I were talking about The Offspring, that episode with Data creating Lol. And then with this episode, you have Dodge, who is essentially she's a Cylon from Babylon, or Babylon 5, from Battlestar Galactica at this point.
From the reboot,
positronic brain, but a human body, but she can still jump like 50 feet and is still super strong and super fast, so I don't really understand that. But I don't think that they paid enough attention to the subtleties of everything that happened in Trek, like that we've known up to this point. And even basic story concepts of like the Romulan assassins that are trying to, they're kind of kidnapping Dodge, I think is what they're trying to do, is take her. But they can still, it's like they can beam onto Earth at will, right? At this point, from what we understand, unless I missed something.
No, I kind of took it that they were already on the planet and they were just using like site to site beaming.
Well, and the reason I ask is, why didn't they just, if they knew exactly where Dodge was all the time, why didn't they just beam Dodge to them?
It might have something to do with the suits that they're wearing, you know?
Maybe.
Like,
maybe it lets them beam through the suits. Yeah, lets them beam through Starfleet shields or something. But it's
because,
well,
like, in Nemesis, there's the little site to site transporter that Data and Geordi build, right? That Data uses to save Picard. It's the big MacGuffin. Maybe something like that. That technology is now built into their suits or something.
True. And maybe we'll know about that in the next episode or couple or few, but it's just even some of the subtle things, like, is that Romulan spitting aliens' blood? Like, it's acid now? I mean, come on. It's stuff like that. I'm like,
I assume that was a chemical. Like, you know how, like, there's, you know, the when someone gets captured and they're like an agent or something, right? They have the cyanide capsule, right? I kind of took this as like a more sophisticated and aggressive version of that, where this person knows that they've failed, right? They're gonna die, so they're gonna try their best to take down the target with them, is kind of how I took it.
I hope
that
is the case.
Like his actual blood.
And if I am wrong, I will buy you and Ray dinner, like, whenever we're proven wrong. I have no problem admitting my shame. But when I saw that, I was like, the first thing I thought of was literally aliens. like you know, Ridley Scott Alien, James Cameron Aliens.
No, I mean, I totally understand that comparison. It never occurred to me that it was their blood. I always thought it was some type of chemical that they had, like a secret agent kind of thing, but more sci-fi-ish. But, I mean, I honestly don't expect them to ever address that.
Oh, you think it might just be a one-off?
Yeah, like, I figure at this point, like, that thing happened, and they're probably not going to show it again. I'm sure we'll see people like this, agents like this, what have you, when they start going after the next one, unless, of course, it seems like maybe that's a whole different kind of methodology to get the other twin for whatever reason. But yeah, I do see your point, though, because she does have the opportunity to fight. They put like the bag over her head and things like that, but you'd think that they could just slap something on her to beam her away. You're absolutely right.
Well, and I got a huge Firefly feel from this. I was like, am I watching River Tam? That was the first thing I thought of. I was like, I'm watching River Tam on screen right now again.
That's a fun comparison. I mean, you're not wrong. I think that there's a lot of parallels there, and I think it was just used as an excuse to show off what her abilities are to make her appear not human, right? So that way we immediately, as the audience, are agreeing with Picard, right? Because I don't think at any point they wanted the audience to be at odds with him, or think that he was just maybe, you know, out of his mind or making things up to feel important. Like, I don't think they wanted the audience to feel that way. So they show us, well, these are all these amazing abilities this person has. And a normal person wouldn't have those abilities, right?
Well, and that's where I want to echo what you said about making this into a two-parter instead, is because when they're talking to Allison Pill's character, they kind of allude to the fact that it's a human with a positronic brain. Well, having a positronic brain doesn't make you stronger and faster. It might make you smarter. So what the hell is going on with these two twins, basically?
Yeah, I think we have to learn a lot about this cloning process, because, you know, they're using, if you, like, okay, so Data blew up with the scimitar in Nemesis. Theoretically, there would be some minor, tiny, microscopic components left, right? Space debris. And maybe Maddox found some. And that's where they have the essence of Data to create these clones. Fine. I'm fine with that. Whatever. But how does that process work, right? Are they as flesh and blood as you and me? Or is it at the subatomic level, are they completely different from us? Do they have stronger muscles and bones and things of that nature? They just don't know it until the software, so to speak, is kicked in.
And that's why I made the Battlestar reference, because without spoiling too much for any of the Battlestar fans out there, when they start creating flesh and blood Cylons, they have the secondary effect of, well, now the flesh and blood Cylons want to know what it's like to be a human, basically, and that becomes a huge story arc. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what's happening with Dodge and her sister? But also, it made me reminiscent of them not mentioning Law. Like, you think Picard would have dropped her name, like, specifically. But maybe she can't, because you and I have talked about the whole issues with licensing right now. And it's not easy to just reference old Star Trek anymore on screen.
No, I don't think that was it. Because they definitely straight up referenced that he made a daughter. That's in the episode. I think they just left the name out in an attempt to have this be a starting point for people. You know, because with New Trek, with Star Trek Discovery and the CBS All Access streaming service, this is kind of a new renaissance for Star Trek, unlike anything we've seen since the 90s. So there's a lot of people who maybe never saw The Next Generation or only saw bits and pieces. And so name-dropping Lol only means something to you if you've seen the content related to The Offspring. Otherwise, that name doesn't mean anything. But instead, saying that Data created a daughter... And Picard mentions this as he's talking to Dodge. That in itself that's the explanation. You don't really need any more to understand the point.
And that's just where the discussion with Allison Pill's character and even towards the previews for the next couple episodes. You know, I'm probably the 1% of 1% of Star Trek fans that as they were making this, I was thinking of Juliana Tainer at the same time. And for those of you who don't remember that name, that was the female android that Soong made to replace the woman he fell in love with when she was dying. Mm-hmm. And she was actually in a Star Trek Next Generation episode. And it's just, that's where I'm starting to run into certain questions on what, and obviously this is only episode one. You know, if I were to judge Next Generation on only like an encounter at Farpoint, I would have similar concerns of like, the space stations are jellyfish. That's kind of weird. Let's see what happens. But, you know, it caught my interest enough that I do want to see episode two. So,
well, that's good. So, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in here that I think is kind of cool. I want to talk about the archives. And so just real quick, I want to throw out that, like, the only thing that really stood out to me that bothered me in this at all is their use of the Anaheim Convention Center for, like, Starfleet headquarters and the archives and stuff, because it's a very obvious building to anybody that's ever been there. And it doesn't look very futuristic-y to me, anyway, as someone who's been there a few times. And so it just was really... It took me out of it quite a bit. I'm not used to watching Star Trek and seeing buildings and being like, oh, I've actually been in that building before. Does that, you know what I mean? And so
you mean like the aluminum handrails that they still use? The Anaheim Convention Center. It's, you know what? And it's the same complaint a lot of people had from 2009 Trek when the engineering section is filmed in like a brewery or something.
Budweiser. Like, they use the St. Louis Budweiser brewery. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I always thought that was a weird choice.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, it looks kind of neat. And then your brain catches you like 5 minutes later. You're like, wait a second. Was that a brewery? That sure as hell looks like a brewery.
Right. It's a little weird. And I'm not used to that, at least. And maybe it's just because I haven't been to places where they filmed other things. Cause I know a lot of stuff are real buildings and real places too, that I've just never been to, but this was the first time that happened to me. But anyway, so the archives and the index. So Picard decides to go visit what's essentially his safe deposit box of the future. And, he's assisted by a hologram artificial intelligence named Index, which is basically the brains of the archives. And we get to see his private archive. Was there any item in there or anything that jumped out to you that you thought was particularly either curious or exciting, anything like that?
Well, I love seeing the model ships of the Stargazer and the Captain's Yacht. But again, seeing them kind of references, like, why doesn't they have a model of the Enterprise D in there? But anyways, that's besides the point. I did like seeing the Klingon Batleth which raised a lot of questions on whether that could have been a Batleth from Worf, or more likely, he just because Picard has done so much stuff for the Klingon Empire that somebody just gave him a Batleth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the freaking, what's its face, of the succession, the arbiter of succession, a human for the Klingon Emperor, the arbiter of succession. If that's not worthy of a Batleth, I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely with you. I hope it's his, mainly because I feel like if it is Worf's, that's probably bad news. you know, like it was gifted to him in Worf's death or something like that, which I wouldn't want. But, you know, they did have the Enterprise E. It's over by the Batleth. But you're right, the Enterprise D is not there. I did think it was a little interesting that they had, like, just really nice, like, Eagle Moss quality XL models rather than, like, the gold ones or anything like that that you saw back on the show. But they were nice. I really liked, I know a lot of people have pointed this out, but I really liked the Captain Picard Day banner.
Well, that's huge, because that episode,
yeah,
the Pegasus episode was not only fun, but was a huge part of Star Trek's story anyways. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of shows that even though Captain Picard would put on that tough guy exterior as captain, at the end of the day, he truly loved being captain.
He did. He absolutely loved it. It was where he was meant to be. And I've mentioned this before on the show that I honestly, after Generations, it never occurred to me that that man would ever become an admiral, that he would stay a captain until he left Starfleet. And I think they kind of came up with the only scenario where it makes sense for me that he would take that promotion. So in my mind, he gets the promotion to command the rescue fleet. That's why he's promoted to admiral, so he can command this fleet for the Romulans. And, you know, I guess that makes sense, right? What would push Captain Picard to go to that next level would be to do the most Picard thing imaginable and try and save an entire civilization.
Yeah, exactly. That was his ship, his chair. He was a great captain, and I'm with you. It would take something extremely unique to get him out of that captain's chair. Very reminiscent to, you know, James Tiberius Kirk.
Absolutely. So we find out, of course, you know, so we have the scene with Dr. Girardi, that's Allison Pill's character. We learn all about, you know, the synthetics are banned, but they were working on all of these different techniques, and Maddox was involved. And for those who don't remember, Maddox was the guy in Measure of a Man who wanted to disassemble Data. And, you know, he's the villain, but by the end of the episode, of course, he's had his eyes opened, yada, yada, yada. So there's all this speculation now that we'll get to see Maddox at some point in this season of Picard. I would not be surprised if we do. But we find out that they were really trying to do this. If they had just had Data, they'd be able to do it. And we get to see B4. So B4 is there in a drawer, disassembled. The reason I want to kind of talk about this for a little bit is it's caused a lot of conversation in the community about what canon is in Star Trek yet again. And I know, Greg, this is something you and I talk about a lot. but prior to the 2009 film, there was a comic book, Star Trek Countdown, that was a tie-in to the movie that showed B4 now fully formed as Data. And people thought that meant that Data was kind of alive, so to speak, in the prime timeline. Well, like has been the case for a long time, comic books, novels, and video games are not canon, official canon in Star Trek. They are canon-like, they are canon-ish, canon-esque, as it were, but the films and the television shows are canon. And so if one of those contradicts something that was written in a comic, a novel, video game, what have you, it's not a canon problem. What do you think, Greg?
No, I'm with you. And I know there's always those people out there that laugh. I'm like, oh, why do you care? Just watch it. I'm like, well, stuff like this is important when it comes to, you know, stories and story writing. Is if Lord of the Rings ends with the ring being destroyed as Smeagol grasps it, and then it turns out that Frodo was dreaming the whole time and wakes up, people are going to be like, this is stupid. They're not going to like the story. So canon is important for story, but it's also good to have rules and restrictions on what is and what is not canon, because there's some crazy books out there. for mm-hmm. any kind of content, there are crazy books. So it's good to have limitations on what is and what is not considered part of the overall main story.
And it's important for Picard because there is the Star Trek Picard Countdown comic, a three-part series, and there's also some novels coming out. And while these will tie in and help expand the story, they are not officially canon. And so if you read those, and I intend to, I've read the first two issues of the comic, but if you read those and then the show does something that contradicts what happens in those, it's not inconsistencies in canon. It's just not. It's not the way the production process works. And so I know it can be confusing and I know it can be complicated or maybe even make you feel like you shouldn't bother with the non-canon stuff. Just think about that as possibilities. It's lore for Star Trek. It's mythology for Star Trek. It's things that might have happened, that could have happened. And maybe something canon will confirm that those events took place. You know, in Star Trek Into Darkness, it references a particular plot thread in the video game that isn't quite canon, right? So anyway, B4 does not become Data. Data is dead, and it's very sad. So, Greg, let's talk about Data. What did you think of the dream sequences involving Data, particularly the opening to the show?
I mean, I think it was important for what they're trying to push with the overall storyline of the synthetics and Data's quote-unquote daughters. So referencing Brent Spiner and Commander Data I thought was important. I like the subtle nuance of how the dream is on the Enterprise D, but Data's wearing the uniform from the Enterprise E. I like that because it's a dream. Things are going to be a little different, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm good with that. I'm good with them playing cards because that makes complete sense. I like that it references what happened to Mars. I thought that was important. That was kind of a good eye catcher, especially for the opening of the episode. Overall, I like the dream sequences. I thought they were valuable to what the overall story's trying to tell. Like I said, I might have my gripes with the show, but it's not related to those.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm with you. I thought they were interesting scenes. Well written. I thought they were really intriguing. The Mars stuff is really interesting. So if you listen to our last episode, Ray and I talked about Short Trek's Children of Mars, which is the first of the Short Trek shows to tie into the Picard show. So you can go and listen to that, but that's very interesting in itself. But to see it happen, to confirm when it kind of takes place and all that type of stuff is very interesting. I liked it. I liked the whole card game. I thought was really cool. The idea that Data would try and trick somebody into thinking he has a tell, and his lack of a tell is in fact his tell, you know, and Picard trying to stretch it out to stall, right? He's offering sugar and cream and all of that because he doesn't want this to end. That's, you know, he makes the statement later that it's the waking up that he's beginning to resent. And that's a really powerful line. The idea that this man who is this incredible person who's done amazing things that you know, we can only dream of doing. He's at a point in his life where being awake is only a painful reminder of what he's lost over the years.
And that's kind of a subtle throwback to Generations when he's talking to Troy after his family is lost in the fire. And he's kind of alluding to the fact there's not going to be any more Picards. He doesn't have a family. He doesn't have kids. Although I would argue in the late 2300s, I'm sure he could have kids if he wanted. But again, it's kind of, yeah, it's him wanting to live the life that he wants to live. And there's no shame in facing his twilight years, but it still doesn't mean it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, there's some just really solid lines like that, though, throughout this episode. So we're nearing the hour mark here. Is there anything else, Greg, that you wanted to cover? Anything else you wanted to talk about in this first episode?
Well, I think where the episode started to truly kind of lose me, and I don't mind being that guy to criticize something I love, is Daj is killed, which, okay, is kind of interesting for the story because it puts Picard back. But then it turns out, oh, she's a twin. And then I'm like, And that's where I was like, oh, man, like, now we know what the next series of this stories is going to be. But what they show in one of the previews and even towards the end of the episode, the Romulans have basically captured a perfectly intact Borg cube and are basically disassembling it. I mean, that is... Talk about a game changer for the Alpha Beta Quadrants, right?
Yeah, that's definitely a big deal. So the twin thing is interesting. So she has that necklace, right? And Picard brings the necklace to Dr. Girardi, and you know, she like immediately recognizes it. And I tweeted about this earlier today on my personal account, but like, it's a nice necklace and all, but is it really that unique of a design? It's just two overlapping circles. It's a Venn diagram is really all that it is.
Yeah, there's nothing really that unique or special about it. At least I didn't think so. I was hoping maybe like, oh, this is made out of some rare material from a comet that was used to build the first android. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. But no,
but it's, yeah, just... it's just a simple design. It's a pretty necklace, you know, and everything like that. But it didn't seem unique enough to garner that kind of recognition. You know, because like first Picard thinks it's really interesting and he looks at it, and then he's suspicious enough to, you know, bring it back with, you know, with him to Girardi, and she sees it and immediately knows what it is and explains all this cloning stuff. And so like, I don't know, it just seems like if you're gonna do that, maybe have a more complex design to whatever that is,
or make it have a message in it or something along those lines, not just two circles intertwined. I'm like, nah, that's...
Now, the Borg cube thing, I mean, I need to know so much more about that, right? Because Soji, Daj's sister, she's there. She doesn't appear to be Romulan, but everybody else appears to be Romulan. And, you know, that seems pretty intense. It looks like it's almost, I think it's a tactical Borg cube. It's a little hard to tell, but I think it's an updated design of that. And yeah, it looks like they've kind of had it under control for quite some time. And, you know, that's going to change the flow of things in the quadrant, right? Because this technology is very different. And if they can adapt Borg technology, that's a real game changer.
Well, yeah. And I mean, when they end the episode, there are hundreds of little, you know, worker bee type ships just crawling around that Borg ship, you know, researching it, pulling things apart and all that. And the reason it's such a big deal to me is in First Contact, the battle with the Borg. You know, if you read a lot of behind the scenes footage, which I know is like beta canon, it's like the battle with that Borg cube was like what, like a 3-day running firefight or something, where reinforcements were coming in from the Federation all the time. And that Borg ship was heavily damaged. That tactical ship did not look that heavily damaged. So it makes you kind of wonder, it's like, was it caught in the supernova energy field somehow and it killed the drones but didn't destroy the ship? That ship alone, you know, you could create hundreds of stories on by itself.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to find drones on that ship, because there was a clip in one of the trailers that looked like a Romulan camp that was talking about like Borg incidences and things like that. So I think they captured them and they were disconnected from the hive somehow. And they're basically being held in like an internment camp on the cube. That's what,
you know,
I
expect. If there's any species in Star Trek I do not want to try to keep contained, it's the Borg, just FYI.
Right? Yeah. All right, so anything else on this episode?
No, that's about it. I know it's only the first episode, and we could probably keep talking about it for another hour or two, but I think this is a good pause point before we start talking on episode 2 next week.
Awesome. So that Ready Room episode, Will Wheaton had on two guests, Hanel Culpepper. She is the director of episodes 1 and 2. And so she was on, that was cool to see. Historically speaking, this is also a big casting decision, because she is the first black woman director to direct Star Trek. So that's a big deal. And so I thought she was great, and seeing her interview with Will was really fun. And they also had Michael Chabon on, who is one of the creators of the show and one of the writers and things of that nature. And so he has some behind the scenes production pitching kind of stuff to talk about, which was pretty cool. So if you're interested, you can go check that stuff out. At a minimum, you know, you can support Will Wheaton a little bit. All right, well, then that's going to be it for us this week. Next week, we will review episode 2 of Star Trek Picard, so join us for that next week. We are starting a new promotion on our Patreon, patreon.com/heroespodcasts. If you go out there and join our premium tier, then you can get ad-free versions of all of our upcoming episodes, anything new starting from last week across all of our shows on the Heroes Podcast Network. Just a nice way to help support the network and get some ad-free content at the same time. So go check that out. You can catch Greg at @the_bittersteel on Twitter and me at the Star Trek Dude. You can also join both of us in our Facebook group, Red Shirts and Runabouts on Facebook. It's our forum. Come talk Star Trek with us. We have spoiler threads and spoiler-free stuff, and we're doing polls and talking about all the Star Trek things. So come talk to us out there. Otherwise, at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or heroespodcasts.com. Subscribe to the show. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, you name it. Come subscribe, come talk to us. We'll catch you next time. Live long and prosper.